Paramedic invents a new pill bottle. Accelerated paramedic programs falling short. The undervalued EMS provider. And we'll take a look at epinephrine in our Med Review segment this week. If that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on this week's episode of The Medic Cast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is The Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the pod medic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Medic Cast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic. I'd like to welcome all of you to this week's program. We have a great show coming up for you this week. Lots of good stuff coming along, including a look at a news item who takes a paramedic who came up with a rather novel way to fight drug abuse of prescription drugs. So you can check that out coming up later on in this week's news. After today's news items, we'll be checking out a medication review for EMS providers as we check into the use and proper administration of epinephrine in the field. That, of course, follows up on our segment on allergic reactions we covered in last week's episode. And all of that is coming up next here on The Medic Cast. Before we get to all of that, though, I do want to make sure that you are following up on all of the information you get in this and checking out the links and additional information available for you over at the MedicCast blog. You'll find that over at mediccast.com/blog. There's a show notes link at the top of the page. Click that link and it'll take you right to the most recent episode. And of course, you can scroll down there and find any previous episode you're looking for. Remember, there's also a search box on the front page of the MedicCast right there on the upper right-hand corner. So if you're looking for something in particular, take some time and follow up on information there. Whatever the case may be, I want you to get the full information on anything I talk about in the show and understand how it applies to your own EMS practice and work within your own protocols. If you want to get back in touch with me, make sure you do so. You can email me here at podmedic@mac.com. I hope you'll shoot me an email with your comments, your questions on the shows, or maybe even send me suggestions or interview ideas for future episodes. Either way, I do work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, and I will get back to you. So keep those emails coming in. Also, remember, if you're an iPhone or Android mobile phone user or tablet user, you can check out the brand new free MedicCast app for you in your device's store. Just search for MedicCast EMS app. Also, the MedicCast survey is active again. I sent out an email blast recently to some of you, but if you didn't get the email newsletter and you want to take a moment, I'd really appreciate it if you'd head over and check out mediccast.com/survey and take the MedicCast survey there. It helps keep the audience up to date and lets me know a little bit about, basically in general terms, who you are so that I can get advertisers that you'll be interested in. I mean, the show comes out for free, folks. I got to pay for it somehow. So help me out, take a few minutes and do the survey. That's enough contact information. Remember to support our sponsors and let them know you heard it here on The Medic Cast. It helps keep the show coming out each week and keeps the lights on here at The Medic Cast. Take a moment and tell them thanks for supporting the show. First off in the news this week is a paramedic who came up with a great idea to come back and fight prescription drug abuse. An unnamed Las Vegas paramedic in this article got together with a group of Brigham Young University engineering students to come up with a new type of prescription pill bottle. The new pill bottle is electronic in nature and is considered both hack-proof and tamper-proof. Pharmacists can program the pill bottle to dispense medications on a specific schedule. The user then enters a PIN code on the top of the pill bottle to get the bottle to dispense medication one pill at a time. I love it when paramedics and other EMS professionals come up with a better way to do something, and we definitely are showing our natural inventive natures at work when we do this. In this case, some paramedics saw that a problem was happening in their area with overdoses of prescription drug medications and decided to find a better solution. According to the CDC, over 100 deaths occur from overdoses each day in the United States. So if a solution to this, like just a simple pill bottle that only costs about $20, could stop that from happening, well, that would definitely be worth the $20 price tag. In any case, I want to offer kudos. I don't know who this paramedic is, but some Las Vegas paramedic out there and her engineering team put together a great idea that we'll hopefully see soon in our local pharmacies. Have you seen a good idea recently developed by a paramedic or EMT? If you have, let me know about it. I'd love to hear from you. Send me an email in here to podmedic@mac.com. Maybe I can feature the product here in a future episode of the show, or maybe even have the developer on and do an interview segment. South African EMS is in the news this week with an article I found talking about challenges they're having with shortened and accelerated paramedic courses, putting out providers that maybe aren't quite so adequately trained or prepared to work in their system. A recent report from the Health Professions Council of South Africa is proposing that all of these accelerated paramedic programs be shut down. According to the chairman of that board, these shortened paramedic and EMT courses don't comply with their national qualifications. And these qualifications apparently have been revised recently with higher education qualifications in their frameworks. Apparently, the board itself doesn't have the power to act on its own, but the report has been submitted to the National Health Department. And I think it's being considered at this time by the health minister in South Africa. You know, it's interesting because I've seen similar programs over the years pop up here in the U.S. in the past, and I've always questioned the ability to turn out paramedics with adequate qualifications and clinical time to be effective and operate safely in the field. Now, I'm not talking about bridge programs where persons with existing qualifications, like those that are combat medics, for instance, or nurses even, are brought into compliance with a different level or a cross-trained level of training in the civilian sector. These are programs that are usually very expensive and tell people that they can be trained in the course of 6 to 8 weeks to be paramedics. And these accelerated programs don't do anybody any favors. When you look at the national standards and hourly requirements for education and clinical time, I have to say it's virtually impossible to get enough hours in that time frame. And as a result of failure of many of their students to pass national registry certification or achieve state licensure, many of these programs have been shut down. I'm sure we'll see other stories like this from other parts of the world as other systems attempt to increase the number of trained personnel riding in their ambulance services. We'll have to see, and I'll keep an eye out and report on them in the future. Finally, in the news this week, a story I picked up written by Dr. Seth Hawkins, who we've had here on the show before. Seth is a former EMS 10 Innovator Award winner and is a medical director in Western North Carolina. He wrote an article recently, carried in the local newspaper and on their website, talking about the undervalued EMS worker in that state, I mean, consequently any state, I think. Seth points out that the amount of money most EMS professionals earn is not in line with the type of skills and education level they have achieved in their profession. He compares paramedics, for instance, to nurses, who he also says are underpaid, but shows that even nurses are making more money than paramedics make, sometimes, in most cases, twice the amount or more. According to the article in North Carolina, paramedics are supporting a family just about $7,000 above the poverty level when they're working full-time. They work unusual hours, as many of us know, and we also know that many people in the EMS world work more than one job as an EMS professional just to make ends meet. I like this article not just because it's written by somebody I know, but also because it's a great way to educate the public about what we do, how we do it, and how little we get paid for doing it. Now, Seth goes into this in his article, talks about EMS and medical directors. He also talks about how their system is underserved, even though it's clearly part of a very well-paid healthcare system they bring patients into. And he urges the leaders in his article to get their legislators to support federal legislation currently in play that implements the Institute of Medicine recommendations on including EMS in Medicare and other billing programs for services other than merely transporting patients. I urge you to read this article, perhaps send it to your own medical director and leadership, and urge them to perhaps consider writing or putting forward the idea for a similar article in their own local newspaper or on local news websites. We're only as good in the public eyes as the last time they saw an ambulance drive by, and they don't understand what it is we do. We have to educate them about it. So let's take the initiative and get that education information out there. Coming up in this week's Tip of the Week is a medication review for EMS providers, both BLS and ALS EMS professionals, on the medication epinephrine. Last week on the show, we looked at allergic reactions, including anaphylaxis, and following up on that this week, we'll be covering one of the treatments for allergic reactions, severe allergic reactions specifically. Stay tuned in future weeks. We'll look at some of the other medications and treatments for allergic reactions. But for now, let's get on into this week's segment on epinephrine.
This week's Tip of the Week, looking at epinephrine in our EMS Med Review. And we're going to be looking at, of course, the mechanism and class of the medication, indications and contraindications, side effects, precautions, interactions, and our common dosages. And these are going to be ACLS dosages as well as doses for things like allergic reactions, which we've covered recently. So epinephrine is a naturally occurring chemical in the body that we've synthesized and now can administer externally. It's a catecholamine. It has both alpha and beta receptor effects. It's an agonist of those receptors. It increases their potentiality, the receptiveness, and will go ahead and have positive alpha and beta effects. It has, in the cardiac realm, it has positive inotropic, chronotropic, and dromotropic effects. So remember, that's contractility, that is increasing rate and increasing automaticity of the heart. And all of those things are, we have to keep those things in mind when we're giving any medication. If we're giving something, for instance, for allergic reaction, we need to remember that we're going to have cardiac effects as well. Of course, in the realm of severe allergic reaction, we need to get the epinephrine on board to deal with the other things that it does, which is primarily a bronchodilator. Also peripheral vasoconstrictor so that it reduces some of that hypotension that comes along. So you just need to keep in mind that nothing operates in a vacuum, especially something as harsh in some ways to the body as epinephrine can be when administered. And there's some precautions to keep in mind when doing that. Medication that, when administered via IV, has a very rapid onset, and we need to keep that in mind. When we deal with the pharmacokinetics of a medication, the route has a big effect on how it's administered. And we know this. IV administration is going to be our most rapid onset, most significant effect. And then sub-Q or IM administration has slower onset, primarily because it causes local vasoconstriction. So as you administer epinephrine, IM, for instance, localized vasoconstriction will also restrict and slow down administration. And it's one of the reasons when you administer EpiPen, they advise massaging the injection site. And part of the reason to do that is to overcome some of those vasoconstriction locally, those vasoconstrictive effects locally, and get the medication into the bloodstream a little bit faster. So what we need to do is understand this is a naturally occurring medication. It actually gets taken up by the body and metabolized very quickly by the liver. So it has somewhat rapid onset, and it doesn't last. Its effects don't last in the body extremely long when compared to other medications. It can also be inhaled, and reducing mucosal edema and smooth muscle contractility. And we see that in cases where we use racemic epinephrine via nebulizer to get medication into, for instance, in cases of severe croup or things like that with pediatric patients. What do we use this for? Well, this is a medication used an ACLS protocol for cardiac arrest patients. This is under debate. A lot of people consider epinephrine to be so harsh to the cardiac system, especially in IV administration, that giving this in cardiac arrest may not be the necessarily the most helpful thing we're doing. But it's still in the protocol, and we may see some changes in use of epinephrine. Currently, it is the primary medication we use in cases of cardiac arrest. Also used in moderate to severe allergic reaction, anaphylaxis, and this is both for ALS and BLS patients, BLS care providers. So epinephrine, epi auto-injectors used by BLS and ALS, and then, of course, ALS has the ability to administer IM injection for this as well. Also used in cases of asthma for pediatric patients and also for suspected croup in pediatric patients. It's important just to note that I'm following Maryland EMS protocol here. So if you have something different in any of these med reviews, your protocol situation may have you doing something slightly different than what I'm doing. So always follow your own protocols. Epinephrine also is used in cases of pediatric bradycardia. Contraindications would be patients with hypertension, tachydysrhythmias with a pulse, so both ventricular and supraventricular tachycardias. If there's a pulse present, we don't want to give epinephrine. And think about it. It makes sense. If we don't want to do something that's going to increase the heart rate in cases of patients who have a pulse and have a rapid heart rate. We want to cardiovert and get that heart rate down, not do something to increase heart rate. When giving this in cases of pregnancy, we need to consult unless it's a severe emergency, cardiac arrest, obviously. But even in cases of allergic reaction, if it's only a moderate allergic reaction, we really want to consult for pregnant patients. And the reason for this is, remember, it causes peripheral vasoconstriction, which can restrict blood flow and nutrient and oxygen flow to the fetus. So we want to make sure that we're using appropriate caution. Some of the side effects. Obviously, tachycardias, hypertension. It may induce early labor. Some of that oxygen-limiting effects can cause labor to start early. And patients will be agitated, nervous, maybe complain of a headache. This is probably due to localized hypertension or systemic hypertension related to administering the epinephrine. So just be aware of that. They may have decreased level of consciousness. Why? Well, if we cause a tachydysrhythmia that causes the heart rate to go so fast that they start to lose some cardiac function and effectiveness, well, we're going to have a decreased level of consciousness associated with that. So be on the lookout for these things when they come along. And in cases of croup patients, we need to be aware of what's called rebound edema. This has to do with that rapid metabolizing by the liver. We can give epinephrine to a patient and solve some of their edema in their airways by getting some of that epinephrine down there and reducing the swelling in the airways, causing bronchodilation, causing relaxing of the smooth muscle, but half an hour later, that rebound edema comes right back as soon as the effects wear off. So it's something to be aware of if we administer this, that it's a temporary solution. There needs to be other things done or repeat treatments given. Precautions to keep in mind, this medication doesn't play well with others sometimes, and that includes sodium bicarb. So you don't want to mix this. You can cause precipitation of chemicals out into the IV tubing. So always flush when administering this in the same line with sodium bicarb. If at all possible, use a separate IV line. If you have two lines available, just keep in mind that one's going to be your bicarb line, one's going to be your epi line. That'll make it a lot easier. Otherwise, make sure you flush the system both the tubing and get a, you know, a good 10 cc's or more of saline or lactated ringers flushed into the vasculature between giving doses of bicarb and epinephrine, just to make sure that we are not mixing the drugs and causing that precipitate. We want to make sure we're aware that this is going to cause some additional load on the heart and increase the amount of oxygen used by the heart. So if someone has got, for instance, is in the process of experiencing a STEMI, we don't want to give this medication that's going to cause them to have increased load on the heart related to oxygen deprivation and the fact that they may have a blockage that's going to cause cardiac muscle tissue to be oxygen starved to begin with, and then we increase the amount of activity in that cardiac muscle to cause it to go even faster. This is one of the reasons why this is being questioned by some experts and as to why we use epinephrine in cardiac arrest patients. And again, that debate is ongoing, and always follow your protocols and ACLS guidelines appropriately. Use in cardiac patients really restricted to cardiac arrest. We talked about that. And IV epinephrine should not be used in any patient with a pulse. That 1 to 10,000 IV epinephrine should be restricted to pulseless patients, to that cardiac arrest patient. We don't need to be giving that IV rapid action and full load of epinephrine to a patient unless we deem it extremely necessary, and that would be in the case of patients that are in cardiac arrest. What are our dosages? All right, and again, these are Maryland protocol dosages or ACLS dosages in most cases, but you should follow your own protocols and guidelines. They may be slightly different. In cases of cardiac arrest in the adult, we want to give 1 milligram of 1 to 10,000 IV or IO every 3 to 5 minutes. Pediatric patients, it's 0.01 milligrams per kilogram of 1 to 10,000 IV IO every 3 to 5 minutes. So, you know, that's pretty standardized. It's your ACLS guidelines, and it's pretty standard across most systems. In pediatric patients, you could consider giving via the ET tube 0.1 milligrams per kilogram, 1 to 1,000, and we want to dilute that in 5 mLs of saline or lactated ringers, depending on what your system uses for its primary IV fluid. In cardiac arrest or bradycardia, in pediatric patients, 0.01 milligrams per kilogram, 1 to 10,000 IV IO every 3 to 5 minutes. That's for pediatric patients, and an ET tube dose is the same. But it just consider pediatric patients with bradycardia that may need this medication. Neonates, that is slightly different. ET tube dose is 0.03 milligrams per kilogram of 1 to 10,000. Just keep that in mind. Again, these are Maryland protocols. They may be slightly different for you. In cases of allergic reaction or anaphylaxis, 0.01 milligrams per kilogram, 1 to 1,000 IM is the recommended dose. Maximum dose is 0.5 milligrams, and this is generally for adult patients. And we should be considering this in anaphylactic shock only, severe allergic reaction. However, in some cases, moderate in anaphylactic shock, you may want to consider an IV dose of 0.01 milligrams per kilogram, slow IV push of 1 to 10,000. But again, in many cases, you'll want to consult for that in cases of anaphylactic shock only. However, the standard dose for moderate to severe allergic reaction is 0.01 milligrams per kilogram, 1 to 1,000 IM, up to a max dose of 0.5 milligrams. So again, that IV dose is really for severe emergency situations, anaphylactic shock situations, where they're not responding to the IM dose. You may want to consult or consider using a 1 to 10,000 IV for these patients. And that's usually a consult required medication dose. For croup patients, pediatric patients with suspected croup, 2.5 milliliters of Epi 1 to 1,000 via a nebulizer. And this is some pretty significant. For patients that need it, this can have a very positive effect and can be very necessary in reducing severe airway reactivity. Consider following up with another dose of the same dosage of 2.5 mLs, 1 to 1,000 via nebulizer. Again, follow your own protocols for that, but that's pretty standardized. For the BLS providers out there, your auto-injector doses, just to remind you, for the adult dose, and this is generally age 3 and up, is 0.3 milligrams IM is what the auto-injector dose is. And for pediatric patients under 3 years of age, it's 0.15 milligrams IM. So just keep that in mind. That's your BLS auto-injector doses. You'll note that they're slightly less than the maximum allowed doses for ALS providers. Additional resources, you should always check these out. Again, you can check out Maryland Medical Protocols and the links in the show notes for this episode. Always follow your own protocols, but that's my protocol, so those are what I use for these segments in most cases. And you can also find a neat site called jointemsprotocols.com, which has a lot of just generalized EMS information based on widely accepted protocols. Again, you want to follow your own guidelines from your medical director, but if you're looking for a good study tool, jointemsprotocols.com might be a good resource for you. And in this case, I've used Wikipedia on epinephrine. It's actually a pretty good and well-documented page on Wikipedia, and lots of good information that I found there. So you can check that out as well.
That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week and remind you to follow up on all of the information from this week's show over at MedicCast.com/blog. When you get there, you'll find the show notes link right there at the top of the page, and you can take a moment and check out and follow up on all of that information, the links to the news items you find there, also all of the tips and additional resource links I put there. All of that's there for you as well. You can also sign up for the email newsletter while you're there. There's a little form right there on the right-hand side of the page. Just fill that out, and you can actually get all those links and things sent directly to your email inbox every week. I also welcome your comments and suggestions directly by email, so if you want to, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. You can send in your news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I look forward to hearing from you. And let me know, because I will make sure I get back in touch with you. I work hard to respond to every email that comes in, so please, please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media sites and pages, well, you can do that. You can find me most places under the handle PodMedic. So catch me over at Twitter or Facebook, twitter.com/PodMedic or facebook.com/PodMedic, and friend or follow me on those sites. You can also check out the MedicCast on our very own Facebook page. We have over 4,000 followers there. It's growing all the time. Head over and join this growing community at facebook.com/MedicCast. Click the like button at the top of the page and join the MedicCast community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the MedicCast with your colleagues and students in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, tips, and more every Monday morning so you can kick off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the MedicCast today and share the show with somebody you know. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors, and remember, folks, scene safety. BSI.